Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 and WHUT-TV. I'm Harold Fisher. We're talking to the therapist tonight about various mental health issues. My guests are licensed professional counselor, Dr. Nikisha Riggins, and Dr. Danielle Harrison, psychiatry residency program director at the Howard University College of Medicine. They are answering our therapy questions and yours. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can X me at HFisherWHUR, or you can find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. By the way, if you're having difficulty getting through, please keep calling. I promise I will get to all of your phone calls before 8 o'clock. A lot of people on the line, lots to talk about. Before the break, you know, Dr. Riggins, we were talking about, what is it again?
CBT.
CBT. And Lugosi was saying that he had been in therapy in that CBT form of treatment. But what might, why would someone have to go into that kind of treatment? I wish he was still there. I could have asked him if he were willing to share, but he was very open with the fact that he was in that treatment or had been a part of that, you know, that treatment. Why would someone be in that?
Mm-hmm. Oftentimes people come to therapy not knowing what the root cause is. As he said, he had been in therapy for 6 years before this childhood trauma surfaced. So it could be that maybe there were repeated romantic failed relationships, and he's wanting to know what's going on. It's maybe about me and I would like to address that, or issues at work. And over time, as these present day things are being addressed and as he feels comfortable in the therapeutic space, recognizing, oh, okay, this isn't about today, this isn't about last year, but about decades ago, that something big has happened and I need to work through it in order to feel the present day release.
Interesting. Let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Desi calling from DC. Desi, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Good evening, everyone. I was thinking, and I've been close to the K-12 students in our city. And, you know, I'm thinking that everybody cannot even afford therapy. But I'm thinking, you know, in a better world, we would have licensed professionals at schools to help with conflict resolution. I think that's an area that is not being addressed in terms of being able to help, you know, our, you know, 5-year-old in school, you know, just like they used to have, sadly, just like they used to have home ec. And whatever, I think we're at a place now where we need something in place, not just a nurse, but we need to have someone on site or some kind of program implemented in the curriculum.
So great, we do have, mm-hmm. Well, I can say here at Howard University Department of Psychiatry, we have a grant from the city, so we do have some school-based programs at several different schools here. And it is important because we know that tension, that anger, that stress is palpable. You know, I don't even know if, like you said, I don't even know if I can beep at this person just to go in traffic, if it's going to result in someone pulling out a gun or cussing me out or wanting to fight me. Conflict resolution is important. Like, if I get mad at this person at school, are they going to bring a gun in here? If I say something they don't like, are they going to start to bully me? So these things are very important. There are school-based programs. There are school-based therapists. However, there are not enough. There are not enough, and they are easily overwhelmed. There might be one therapist or hire two therapists for an entire school? And how can they manage all of this conflict, all of this angst, all of this stress, all of this depression, all of this anxiety? So I agree with you. It is something that should be funded. I do appreciate that the DC Department of Behavioral Health is funding some of these programs here, but I just, we need more. We need more people who look like us, who can identify and talk to our children.
Desi, thank you so much for your phone call. Dr. Harrison, to that point, what happened? You know, and I say what happened because I remember when I was in grade school, when there was conflict, we had counselors, but we didn't see the counselors to deal with it. We dealt with it in the principal's office.
Or you dealt with it on the playground.
Mm-hmm. And this is why I say no. Because, no, you fought on the playground. Mm-hmm. That's why you were dragged into the principal's office or a teacher. And sometimes counselors would deal with it. But it was, I just remember, junior high school. We didn't have middle school back in the Flintstone days. But, you know, but I remember we had a principal, you know, Mr. Hawkins, and he sat us down and he said, "What's wrong with you? What happened? What was said?" And there was a short conversation, I don't know, 20 minutes. And he said, "Well, that's ridiculous." And we understood, even at that young age, that it was ridiculous. What has changed?
So what he did, he asked you what happened.
Right.
What's going on?
Mm-hmm.
He didn't call the police.
No.
He didn't have the police come and arrest you as a 5 or 6 year old in your school.
Well, junior high school, but still, yeah. But,
or a
12, 13, or a 12 right year old.
They didn't. Yeah. He didn't have the police come and arrest you, put you in handcuffs, send you straight to the carceral system as a young black male. He didn't do that. He asked the question that needs to be asked, what's going on with you or what happened to you? And I think that we aren't asking that question. It's now like a punitive thing. Well, if you're acting up, I'm sure you've seen on social media kids being handcuffed, kids being arrested by the police. The questions aren't being asked. There's also... And I have to say that I am a fan and a supporter of social media used in the right way. But there's also social media. There's bullying. There's people not even going to the principal or to the therapist or to the teacher or the counselor. They're doing it directly to each other, bullying each other on social media. It's readily available and always in their face. I'm interested in hearing what Dr. Riggins thinks.
Yeah.
I had somewhat of a visceral response to what you said. When I think about principals, I think that they are trained for other things other than teaching and managing children around social emotional well-being. And so for me, that's the place of a counselor. I do think principals are important and can assist with that. I did not hear you say that the principal asked about how you all were feeling or...
No, let's drill down a little bit on that. No, he didn't ask how we were feeling. He asked what was wrong.
Or what's going on.
What happened? And he talked about my mama. And I talked about his mama. Okay? Mm-hmm. And then somebody kicked sand. And then it realized that we got to the point, and again, we're talking about a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, which goes back to the point that I was saying about, you know, what happened, because he was able to reason with two dirty little black boys and make us understand, leave each other alone, okay? And because this was me. I was in that office and they didn't call my mother. I didn't get in-house detention. It was a conversation, and he reasoned with us and made us realize that what we were doing was a waste of time, needless, stupid, whatever description. And so it didn't get to the point where we needed to sit down on someone's couch. And I'm not against that now, because it looks like there needs to be so much more. But which goes back to, I ask a third time, What has happened?
I think now there's more an awareness that children have just as many feelings as adults do. And I know earlier you made the comment that when trauma happens as a child, those are the adults that you see, the untreated trauma. So when I think about children who maybe have an altercation at school, they perhaps don't know that this thing has caused such a big feeling in them, and they're stuffing it. They're recognizing that this person that they're talking to can't truly support whatever it is that they're feeling inside, or maybe they just don't know because it hasn't hit them yet. And by the time it has hit, they don't have a person to speak to about it, or they don't recognize that there is a safe space, even if there is one. And then they grow up and they then become adults who still need to process that thing that happened when they were a child.
Yeah, because I really think, and again, that was then and this is now, and quite honestly, the issues of, based on what you're sharing, are much more complex than just two boys shading each other, doing the dozens, talking about each other's mother. There are so many other things that require much more, a multi-layered approach, as you said, as opposed to not just the principal, but the counselor, bringing the parents in, all of that. This is a mental health issue as opposed to just the, you know, your basic two boys knocking heads. Something to think about. Let me go back to the phone lines. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. D calling from Maryland. D, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
You know, people give you advice, but I want to hear an exact number, an exact address to go to when people need mental health help. I just don't know where to look more than the yellow pages. I just, you know, the knowledge needs to be, I'm not easily, you know, found. I can't find some of these things. Where do I go get the help I need or for my children?
Dr. Harrison, you first.
So the yellow pages, I'm hoping you mean now like Google, but the main thing that, you know, was launched over a year ago is the 988 number. The 988 number for emergencies for mental health issues. But also, if you're saying, like, I don't have this crisis right now, but where can I go? I don't have this crisis right now. How can y'all help me? And that's supposed to be the go-to resource, 988, like 911, but 988 for mental health. Also, if you have the privilege, and understand I'm saying the privilege of being insured, because we know that insurance is a privilege. We know that therapy is even a privilege. Being able to see a psychiatrist is a privilege. If you have that, your insurance companies, call them and tell them, I pay all this money every single paycheck. I need help, and I want to see someone who looks like Dr. Riggins. I want a black therapist who understands trauma, who has natural hair, whatever it is, say that, and this is what I need to be able to survive. And I pay for this insurance, and it's their job to help find someone for you and someone who's in network so that you're not paying these huge amounts out of pocket. So lean on your insurance. Also, 988 is a resource.
I tried that, and thank you for sharing that. And they do call, and they do like, you know, like respond back to you and say how so-and-so is doing after, let's say, an episode has occurred. But you know how you got the number for poison and you get the number for the fire department? It seems like to me, other than that 988, it should be a local number where you could catch a bus or taxi or drive to go to that address to say, it's like, every place always has a waiting list.
Every place does have a waiting list,
waiting,
unfortunately.
Lists are long. They're
real long, like you. And back, look, we used to get knowledge from the front porch where people would exchange information, and years of knowledge would be, you know, passed out. But there's no more front porches, and everybody's not into the University of Google.
So Dee, let me suggest this. First of all, how old are you?
How old I am?
Yes, ma'am.
pretty old senior citizen.
Now, there's nothing wrong with being a senior citizen. Some folks can't say that. But you do have, I would imagine you do have a doctor for some of the physical issues that you...
Yeah, it's my grandchildren.
Right. Well, talk to your doctor. Your physician, you know, if your back hurts, if your foot hurts, if he or she is telling you need to eat better, exercise, what have you, that your doctor can also make a recommendation and point you in the direction regarding any mental health issues that you may be challenged with, or that your children or grandchildren, that's what they're there for. They're not just there to help you overcome the flu. They are there as a resource for you. And to that point, if there's a younger person that you do trust, I'm certain that they would also be able to point you in the right direction or help you Google this information. Just because you are an older person doesn't mean that you should not have access to the best health care available. So, Dee, keep that in
mind. Oh, I understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yes, I do.
But Dee, keep that in mind, and we wish you the best of health. Thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Alana calling from Maryland. Alana, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
So my question is, what about, like, me, I never had therapy before. So I will always find a solution to deal with whatever's going on, whether it's job loss, problems, whatever. But my question is, how is that affecting my kids? Would they use that same behavior as life decided to turn for them? What advice would they give to me in that situation? Because I've been through a whole lot of stuff, but I've always found a way to deal with it, whether it's exercising, whether it's running, whether it's walking, whether it's yoga. But with my kids, now they're growing up in this, you know, this world and all these stuff that's happening, I'm noticing they are, like, taking my pattern. They're, like, shutting people out. Hmm. And that is why I'm, like, you know, they were like, you know, Mom, you know what I noticed today? Somebody did this. You know what time is it for them? And I'd be like, what? Time to not deal with them ever again. Those behaviors not what we pertain to me. Is that bad for them? For me, I seem it's like they're seeing the problem before it gets worse. Because that's what I do. I naturally just, once stuff is start coming and I feel like, oh, it's getting overloaded, how can I separate it? How can I not put them together?
Well, let me see, Alana, let me see what our guests have to say. Any thoughts about what Alana is asking?
It sounds like you have an awareness that what you're doing is impacting your children in a way that you don't like, and you're looking for a better way. I do know that therapy can be helpful, and I'm also aware that if I could ask... Okay. I'm wondering what patterns you have noticed around what leads you to separate from people.
I think she was saying her children.
Say for instance, dishonesty. If you come around and, like, say for instance, if my child went to school where a kid had bring home a gun, we would move from that school. It's like we just separate ourselves. That's what I've been doing, but I notice they're doing that now. Even with friends, they're like separating themselves. And I mean, I don't know if it's affecting them as they get older. It's working for me because I cannot, not every day you can maintain all these pressures that's coming for you. So you have to find a way. It's like a puzzle. So my way is like, once I see that you're going on a path that is not working for me, I'm going to cut you off. They're like similarly doing the same thing. Like, oh, I was in school today and this guy offered me something to smoke. Oh, I don't even want to be around there anymore. Mom, I'm done. I don't want to call. I'm cutting them off. So I don't know. I'm figuring they're looking at me and adapting that. I'm not sure if it's going to hurt them as we go forward. I mean, for me, it's just naturally, I'm just
I can't take about so much, so I'm going to have to put some of the puzzle in the corner and cut you off.
Sounds like she's talking about boundaries.
Right. So I was going to say that are just healthy, and it's okay to separate yourself from people who are harming you or your children in some way.
Right. So it sounds like a mix, what I'm hearing. And
hold on for Alana. Go right ahead, Dr. Hairston.
It sounds like a mix of different ways to cope with things, and there are coping with things differently is appropriate. The way that I cope is not the same way that you cope. So doing yoga, doing exercise, walking, running, all appropriate. Having strong and healthy boundaries, all appropriate. Like, I'm not going to engage with this person. And then therapy is also appropriate. But yes, your children are seeing how you manage things. And there's extremes. Like, well, if someone makes me upset, we're going to remove them from that school. Like, that might not be the response that we need to have here. But if someone makes me upset, what am I going to do to manage this, to cope with that? That's when something like CBT therapy comes into place. Or that's when something like exercise, or I'm going to just process it. Mindfulness is another thing that people like to do. Like, how can I separate myself from this moment and remember and come back to who I am and ground myself? So yes, you should have boundaries, and you should also have other ways to cope with things. It's not a one-stop shop. Like, I don't want to do yoga. I don't want to do yoga. That's not for me. But I have I go on walks around here all the time when someone is stressing me out. That's my coping. I'll go on a walk, see what gentrification they're doing over here in Shaw. And and I put on my music and I take my break. And then I don't have to come back and say, I'm never talking to y'all again. I'm just going to try to meet people where they are and know that I have this boundary that I'm going to have to step away. So everything in moderation, but not to the extent. Streams.
Yeah. Alana, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Joe calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling, Joe. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I was calling about the grief during the holiday.
Sure.
I lost my wife a year or two ago.
Oh, we're sorry to hear that.
The holidays have always been kind of a rough time for me anyway. But now, dealing with that and being in the house by myself, it just seems even rougher. And you reach out to people. People say, well, just give me a call. You need to talk. But people have their own lives. They have things going on with their lives. And they can't always talk when you need to talk. And it just leaves me sometimes, just leaves me in, I don't know, feeling like a little turmoil or something. You know, I don't know. Just trying to get through the holidays.
Dr. Riggins.
First, I do want to acknowledge that grief is hard. It's not something that comes with a timeline. It doesn't it doesn't have a particular pathway that it takes. And so I think knowing that and going into the holiday season can be helpful. And being aware that, yes, there's community, but also thinking about what kinds of things maybe you can do and begin to accept within yourself to plan for this season coming up.
So what might those things be? What would you recommend?
I would have a conversation and say, okay, what kinds of things bring you joy? What kinds of times of day or locations tend to trigger you? And work with him to come up with a plan so that you said that there are times when you reach out to people and they are not available. But if you know that perhaps maybe you and your wife had a particular evening or morning routine and that specific time is notably difficult for you, to maybe beforehand, it when possible, make an arrangement either with yourself or with someone else so that it's not catching someone else off guard that you're reaching out to, or even yourself.
Right. What impact do you have family in the area, Joe?
I do.
What impact might connecting with family during this time have on helping him through that?
It depends.
Right. It depends. Just on thinking the about the boundaries. Yeah.
Well, I'm assuming that they are good people and would be a safe place for you. Would you recommend that he be a part of that, particularly during that during this holiday season?
Quite possibly. I think it definitely needs a maybe bigger conversation, though, because being with family, being at a particular house or event can be even more triggering. So perhaps it could be that it's a season to create a new tradition, maybe spending the holiday or part of the day with friends or outside or doing yoga, whatever other coping thing that can bring a sense of release and a sense of peace versus, I don't know, some people decorate their Christmas tree after a meal and like, okay, maybe I can eat with you, but I can't do that other activity with the family because that's a little too much.
I would say that this is busy season for me. This is going to be the heavy season, starting with the holidays, all the way through the end of winter. A lot of times people think, oh, the holidays bring me joy, like I'm excited, but that's not for everyone. Like sometimes it triggers memories, conversations, past traumas and things like that. It's also dark. Like it's dark at 5:15 out here, and seasonal affective disorder is a real thing. So sometimes people need light boxes. Sometimes people need some brightness that they have to sit with just to bring you back to where you would like to be. So it's important for us to understand that this is happening, and building community, I know we said, but building community is important, and building community with intention. So not just one person I might call, but a group of people I might call. And I might not just say, oh, can I sit and talk with you? I might say, like, can we all go out for, like, brunch? I don't know if I feel like doing, like, the whole dinner, but can we go out for brunch? Or can we go out and do this on a different day? And also, yes, it's important to have your friends. Yes, it's important to have your family. But it's also important for you to have someone who's a professional to talk to. Like, don't just lean on them, because, like you said, a lot of people have different problems and have different things, their own lives going on. But is it time for me to join a group? Is it time for me to engage in group therapy? Is it time for me to talk to a counselor, a grief counselor? It's never too late. Like, oh, this happened 2 years ago, I can't talk about my grief anymore. Like, it's always appropriate that to reach out when you need that help.
The in my, you know, in my therapy degree, you know, it sounds to me as if, at least in one sense or another, outside of formal therapy, that some kind of emotional distraction away from the dark space. Because Joe said just now, he said, when we get around this time, and Joe, you know, the loss of your wife, it's still very, very fresh. It's only been, what, 2 years.
Right.
But to be around the emotional light space, is that, for lack of a better term, is that a distraction towards healing? How would you describe that?
Well, I actually belong to a men's group for grieving.
Mm-hmm.
Good.
But the problem with that is, our group, we had our last session the other day, and we don't start back until January.
Mm.
And it's like, dude, I really need y'all now. Yeah.
But can you reach out informally? Can you send a text
to
the group?
I am. Yeah, I am, because I'm still in touch with the facilitator and a couple of guys in the group.
Yeah.
Okay. So we all kind of felt the same way. It's like, this is not the time for us to have a break.
Right.
Yeah. Right, right.
Well, Joe, I appreciate you reaching out, and as the experts here suggested, definitely reach out to, you know, to those that you can support or that can support you. But also, if there is that light space, that space of joy, that piece of joy that you can find during this time on the road to healing, it may be a difficult road, it may be a long road, but stay on the road to healing.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
We wish you absolutely the very, very best. Thank you so much for giving us a call. Quickly, let me go to Kenneth. Kenneth calling from D.C. Kenneth, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
I'm calling because earlier you were talking about trauma affecting children.
Yeah.
And we also talked about things being passed along from grown up to children. When I was very young, I was in an abusive home where my father abused my mother. We eventually got away from that, but I may have been traumatized. And then later, my wife passed away and left me with two boys. And I think I'm well adjusted, but I'm not sure if I passed any trauma to them, because now I notice that my kids kind of, my number two son, he kind of self-medicates. He smokes a joint on the way home.
So Kenneth, you know, I'm low on time. Really quick, what's your question?
My question is, what can a family do? Because I'm afraid that we are going to pass this on to my grandson. What can a family do to try to resolve all the trauma and so that everybody can grow up to be well-adjusted?
Real quick, Dr. Harrison.
A family can talk about it. That's the first thing you can do, is talk about it. Like, do you notice that maybe your dad, what do you notice he does? What are his activities? Obviously, I'm not y'all's therapist or psychiatrist, but the way to start is asking and talking about it. Don't wonder, like, I wonder if this is impacted. I wonder if this has some type of effect. Actually ask them, address it, figure out what they're thinking, watch them, monitor them. Do they also seem like they're, oh, okay, this is what we're going to do. Okay, that's what we do to get through things. Address it and talk to them about it.
Yeah. Kenneth, thank you so much for your phone call and your question, and at least, you know, taking those first steps to trying to heal not only yourself and your family. We are out of time, but I wanted to thank both Dr. Nikisha Riggins and Dr. Danielle Harrison for talking to us. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you for having us.
Finally tonight, the holiday season is upon us. And for most of us, that means ripping and running the streets for holiday feasts, parties, and gift shopping. But this is also the season to take a breath and consider checking in, even visiting the loved ones you've promised to visit all year long, but never seem to get around to doing it, especially the older loved ones in our lives. Think about it and do it now before it's too late. As my mother always says, we're not here to stay. That's the Daily Drum for this Wednesday, November 15th. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.